are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 30th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. Cliff Schechter will be joining us, as he does on every Friday we are lucky. Also on the program today, to ostensibly give me a movie pick for the weekend, best-selling author, acclaimed actress, friend of show, Isabel Gillies, will be joining us. Also on today's program, President Obama announces, maybe a day late, a dollar short, but the age of austerity should be over. And Mitt Romney doing his best to ruin my fantasy 2016 fantasy presidential pick team assembled last night on MSNBC drops out of the race. Don't fret, folks. I aced it last night. Also on the program today, Bibi Netanyahu calling. Like, let me put it this way. My daughter has access to an iPod that allows her to make calls through an app. And they get frantic when there could be a snow day. That's what Netanyahu is like. He's calling every Democratic leader. Like, please, please, when they come, just vote for the war.
From one non-Schwarzer to another, I would just like, look, I understand you need to the Obama, so maybe just 7 or 8 standing ovations versus 12.
Yes.
Anything, please.
Please come to my talk.
President Obama also says, asked the Democratic lawmakers, stop reading the Huffington Post. Get your TPP information somewhere else. We will discuss all of that. And I think with Cliff, we're going to be talking. Well, we've got a bunch of stuff to talk with Cliff. Folks, a couple of things. Tomorrow or this weekend is the last couple of days for you to nominate the Majority Report for a podcast award at podcastawards.com. We have the link on the front page of the blog. It will remind you in that link to vote for us for Best News in Politics and People's Choice. Right, Michael?
I'm looking for that sound for you right now of you on up. So what did you say? I'm sorry.
Yes, okay. Sam.
Thank you, Matt.
Yes, Sam.
Podcastawards.com. Nominate us. And then starting next week, I'm going to remind you to vote for us every day. This is we need to win the fourth year in a row. I don't know why it's so important to me, but it is.
It's very important to all of us.
It's very important to me. And you can support the show in many other ways. By becoming a member is the best of all ways. By pennies a day, you get to support the free show. And then as a bonus, we give you some extra listening material. You can go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee. It's fair trade coffee, folks. That means everybody along the supply line gets a fair payment for their work. It is sold by a co-op, so all the employees it's owned by the employees, and it's great coffee, and you get 10% off if you use the coupon code MAJORITY, and you can get a Majority Report blend and give that as a gift. And it comes right to your door. JustCoffee.coop. And if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link. It will make no difference to you, but we get a little kickback. Go to MajorityReportKickback.com. And later in the program, I'll talk about that fantasy draft last night. First off, I crushed it. I absolutely crushed it. And I will tell you how I managed to do it. But already, we've had one person drop off of my team, but it doesn't matter because I still have...
You crushed it so badly that even with today's setback, you're still crushing it.
How could you lose Mitt Romney on your team and still be the front runner? Because you got Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, I actually think is the real one.
Yes. Real one for the Republicans.
I got Lindsey Graham. I got Lindsey Graham. So, I mean, that's not going anywhere.
It's like a charity point.
That's not coming through.
Lindsey Graham's like a charity point.
It is up. It's been up.
I got tech problems. You know, all right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always a pleasure every Friday to welcome this young gentleman with this young gentleman with this little ditty.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations. And strategy, you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff
Shakta, Libertas LLC.
Cliffy, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you. How are you doing, Sammy?
I'm doing okay. I don't know if you were aware that last night on All In with Chris, there was a fantasy 2016 presidential draft. I cleaned up. Totally.
Were you drafted?
No, no, no. I was a draftee. I was building a team, a fantasy team. It was a blind draft, which was too bad because I had all my rankings set, and I was a little disappointed by that. But I also found that I have an uncanny ability to pick the right number in a blind draft, except I had Mitt Romney.
Vegas.
Mitt Romney's out of the race.
I know. Isn't that – that's? I just heard it. It's sad.
It is a little
and
bit
And you know,
sad.
I mean, as I sent that on Twitter, you'd think he would have waited to announce it during Black History Month.
Yes. Yes, of course.
I couldn't help that one. Sorry. Okay.
Well, you know, we should talk about that briefly, although, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Mitt Romney was just afraid, frankly, of losing again. I think he could have very well been the nominee, and he would have lost again. And the, you know, I think that would have been just really super embarrassing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seemed to me that, I mean, as much as it seems like we always heard about these people that were so excited for him to be back in the race, it's always a bad sign when none of those people will actually assign their own name to those comments.
Right.
It's always like, you know, anonymous funder W from an anonymous funder X from blah, 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 blah. I mean, were there any people that you could think of besides his spokesperson? Even a number of people that had worked in high positions in his campaign are already with Jeb Bush.
That's right.
Or Rand Paul or somebody else. I mean, it just, I don't think this, much like Mitt Romney's entire political career, I don't think was very well thought out. I mean, for a guy that's supposed to be this guy that crunches numbers and plans things perfectly as a businessman, he should have known that the GOP field was going to form early. People, that the top talent, top activists, top funders and the rest, campaign staff, were going to get on campaigns early because Rand Paul, even, you know, Jeb announced whatever it was now, maybe
right.
2 months ago, I don't remember, but Rand Paul's been talking about this pretty much, you know, for like a year now. Same with Marco Rubio and same with others, and even if they haven't pulled the trigger, they've made it clear enough to the people around them that they're running, you know, while he was having, he and his wife were saying as of like 2 or 3 months ago, there's no way they would run. So it's kind of sad that you have to do that so early because our campaigns take forever. I mean, I'm not going to feel much sympathy for Romney, but that's the way it happened. He just sort of seemed like he jumped in out of nowhere. He felt one night, he felt a ping of maybe I could have done it, and then just started calling people, most of whom I'm sure were already spoken for.
Yeah, I mean, but the fact is, I think, look, he got everything he wanted to get out of this, right? I mean, you know, he basically has been on a reformation tour for the past 2 years to convince people that he wasn't a loser, that he could win and that he should win, and et cetera, et cetera. And frankly, if that's your agenda, if you don't want to go down in the record books as a big loser, he's actually done a pretty good job of that, you know, making, you know, leaving just at the right time. I think this is a smart time for him to basically announce that he wasn't going to do it. And now, you know, he looks like, this, you know, they'll be saying sometime this year, this time next year, if only Romney was in the race.
So that's what you think. Do you think that was the plan all along?
I think that, look, if he had been met with overwhelming joy that he was coming back, that may have changed. But I think it was quite clear to them, like, no, he's not going to win. And
well, that was the other big problem, is just that, you know, for lack of a better term, he's as much of a dick, it seems, privately as he comes off publicly. I mean, whatever the rest of us think about a lot of those other candidates, and I don't think very nice things about any of them, if you just remember back to 2008, when they were running, the one thing by the end there, we had kind of the final four that McCain, Huckabee, and Giuliani all seemed to have in common, is they all hated Romney.
That's right.
And we're not talking about, you know, cuddly people here, right? I mean, we're talking about Giuliani and McCain. I mean, you know, and Huckabee, of course, too, but those two are famous for their tempers and for being the bastards that they are. And yet they all seem to be united in the fact that they could not stand Mitt Romney. And I think that showed in this, too, that maybe if he was this Cincinnatus figure coming to save everybody, the Roman general, you know, who'll come take over, I mean, maybe then everybody would have said, oh, my God, Mitt Romney, and people would have just cleared the way for him. But that not only did that not happen, people who had worked with him before bagged on him. And then you had people with major influence, like Rupert Murdoch, you know, he only has that TV station, saying, you know, he was a terrible candidate, and other right. people. I mean, so not only did he have the talk radio universe against him, the loonies, because he's not loony enough, but even more sort of establishment Republicanism, for whatever that is, of the insiders, both in D.C. and Fox News, places like that, they didn't want him either. And so there's no way.
You know, it's interesting.
Here's one last thing I'll say, which is I agree that in the short term, this may help improve him historically, but it's not going to change anything in the long run. No one's going to remember when he dropped out. And 20 years from now, if kids are studying history books, I mean, you know, history books without creation science and global warming being a hoax, actual history, you'll learn about this the way you learn about Adlai Stevenson and people like that. You'll learn that this guy couldn't stop running and couldn't win.
Right. That's possible. I mean, I think there's something to that. You know, the thing that sticks out for me in terms of Romney being an a-hole is not the, you know, obviously the 47% thing. The thing that sticks out to me is the same thing that sticks out with Andrew Cuomo, which is when Mitt Romney said if his grandfather had stayed in Mexico, implying that if Romney had been more associated with being Latino, he would have won.
Did Cuomo say something like that?
And Cuomo said it's really hard, something to the effect of like, it's really hard. It's been a detriment having the last name Cuomo because you get all of his enemies, but not his friends. And it's like the complete.
I remember that. Yeah. God.
It's not just the privilege. It is the total lack of awareness of the privilege that comes through there. That you could actually articulate this out loud, you know, so much so that like this is an obvious insight. If I was Latino instead of the son of a governor and a former head of the largest car company,
I
would have had a much better shot at being president than all the benefit I got out of that. Or the same with Cuomo,
a legitimate presidential candidate, and what was he, Secretary of Health and Human Services, right. or something like that? Was
right.
HUD?
Right.
I mean, yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is the sign, in my estimation, of a pure a-hole, somebody who has. Who is literally got so much privilege, and not just that, they have so much privilege, and they actually perceive their privilege as something that's holding them back from really getting what they really deserve.
That's what's amazing, because in the society we live in today, where a lot of jobs and a lot of these kinds of things, particularly media jobs, have stopped being handed out in many places due to talent. And now it's just sort of, hey, that person comes in with a name. I mean, think of the daughters of past presidential candidates. It mostly is daughters, frankly, and the TV gigs they've gotten right recently. You can go through Huntsman, McCain, you know, you can go through Chelsea Clinton and on and on. The thing is at least most of them, you know, I think Meghan McCain might have said that, you know, it wasn't because of her father or something and she's an idiot. But it seems, I think most of the other ones, from Abby Huntsman to Chelsea Clinton, at least seem to have some sort of knowledge not to say things like that because they get it, that they wouldn't be there unless it was for their famous family. You know
right.
what I mean?
And you know
but these
what?
Guys just
I mean,
don't seem to get it. It's
I'm
amazing.
Not so excited about nepotism and whatnot, but
I'm not excited about it at all. But
look,
at least
you can't
you
help who your parents are. But at the very right. least, you should have some awareness of I have a tremendous amount of advantages because of this and go forward from there. All right, let's leave.
Let me just add one thing to that quickly, which is, and I think any of us should have that knowledge. You know, and that's the other thing that burned me up about the Romney thing is it wasn't even his dad, you know, at the company he was at and everything. It was all how, well, we started off with nothing, you know, except for the house your dad bought you and the stock portfolio, right? I mean, what gets me angry is that I feel like I've done some successful things, but I know I started off with advantages.
Right.
I know that my parents helped, you know, actually they paid for my college. How many people have that?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, really on a basic thing, you don't have to even be extraordinarily wealthy, but if you're just at a point in our society today where you get some help from your family along the way, you should appreciate that that's not the way it is for most people.
You know, this is a great segue. I was not planning this. I want to talk about Obama's budget to a certain extent and Saudi Arabia, because there was some things that some great pieces about our relationship with Saudi Arabia. But also, let's talk about Jonathan Chait. Jonathan Chait in New York.
Hey, Sam?
Yeah?
I'm hearing some sort of advertising on my end. Oh.
You are?
Yes. Something to do. Oh, wait. It's gone. Let's hope that there's no more.
All right. How's that? Is it gone? I'm sorry. It must have been my computer playing. Are you good now?
No, I can hear you. I just didn't hear what you said. Can you repeat?
Oh, I was going to say, let's turn to, I know we wanted to talk about Saudi Arabia and the Koch brothers' money and the Obama's budget, but let's talk about Jonathan Chait. As long as we're talking about privilege, Jonathan Chait wrote a piece in New York Magazine this past week, about the PC police of the new left. And it has got quite a bit of attention. And, you know, let me just try and state the premise of the piece, which is that there is a movement on the left that he perceives that is anti-democratic and is crowding out voices where PC-ness has become overwhelming and very problematic on the left, from college campuses, people being not allowed to speak at college campuses, one incident of violence that he cites, and then some like mean hashtags or something that he cites, literally. And he's complaining about it. And it's interesting because there's been a lot of this going on for an extended period of time where people have talked about it. There's been better written, I think, pieces on this dynamic. This is a guy who also wrote a very similar piece in 2007 about the blogosphere. You know,
blogo fascism. I think Digby covered this pretty
yes,
well.
Yes, but you know, so this is about this sort of PC. You know, there's a new sort of like PC police out there, I guess, that we see like in the context of, you know, I guess, Colbert at one point, you know, in terms of like the comedy world, but also Jonathan Chait cited some feminist email lists where people get very upset about privilege and whatnot. Give me your perspective on this. I mean, if I articulated this, I think pretty well.
I mean, maybe my response will, you know, will help. I don't know. I certainly do my best. I think that I don't know if nuance is the word here, but I think some of us who are responding to this what Jonathan Chait is saying, we're talking about, in a manner speaking, two different things. I think Digby had a great response, and you brought up what he wrote in 2007. Jonathan Chait has always been a new Republic Democrat, right? It's like being a new Democrat. He's always been a Democrat. I remember one piece where he wrote at one point that Digby didn't even include about how he had a visceral hatred for Howard Dean. I remember that being a big piece that got him on crossfire. He's played this role for years. He's done this gig. You can find, you know, Jacob Weisberg does this stuff. Will Salden does this stuff, you know, and there's a few that aren't really even progressive anymore that used to. Mickey Kaus, who's a complete imbecile, but that's for another show. You know, the lefties, Michael Kinsley, a lot of them went through the New Republic. It created a lot of these types. So when he sits there and whines and he talks about Joe Klein, well, the truth of the matter is, in that piece, the truth is that we know for years that blogs were needed because if the mainstream media were doing its duty, if they were actually acting responsibly instead of he said, she said, you say vanilla, I say chocolate, they're both valid, you know, they're both realistic responses when something has to be one or the other. We don't, you know, the impeachment of Clinton, as she mentioned, the stolen election in Florida, you know, the ignoring 9/11 and the fact that these guys had so many warnings and allowing them to sweep under the carpet, and then the Iraq War. All right, that's what the blogosphere rose up in response to. And it wasn't just, oh, Cheeto eating whoever in their basement. It was a lot of very smart, very well-educated people who were sitting there saying, I can't believe what's going on here. I mean, I remember Josh Marshall started Talking Points memo during the recount in Florida, for example. It was a response to that. So it was enormously necessary to have voices that would reach and affect mainstream media, that were voices that were based in reality and not where's my next paycheck coming from, you know, and what do I need to do to fit into the in crowd and get invited to that cocktail party, the village, as Digby called it. And I think that was hugely helpful. So Jonathan Chait, being the guy to write this, is a joke. He's always just, you know, thought, attacked the left constantly, and then almost seemingly is shocked when they attack back and point out how wrong he is about everything. Where I differ with some of the responses is I do think that there is a real problem in parts of the left with political correctness. There have been huge, you know, fights between the transgender community and the pro-choice community, for example, on how you refer to women. that with nastiness coming out and some vicious things being said. There have been people, somebody wrote a great piece, and I erased it by mistake or whatever, talking about people showing up to progressive rallies, and he was talking about one who's a Hispanic man who was 33, who'd been in the Iraq War, from a rural town, and just happened to say something about, you know, different genders having innate differences. And instead of saying, well, maybe this guy hasn't studied about this or learned about that, just reaming him to the point where he ran away and never came back. And that there are people with progressive impulses, but they don't know the language yet. They don't know what's going on the inside. And there are those that literally shut the gates. And I'm speaking from personal experience because, I don't know what feminist listservs he's talking about, but I'm on just a whole variety of regular listservs. And I've seen this. I've seen where people who are progressive will criticize somebody, African-American, for example, because they're towing the moderate line on charter schools and selling out their own community. And I saw these two progressive, one progressive man and one progressive woman, both of whom were white, get insulted and called racist because they didn't have the right to criticize somebody who was African-American. Literally, that's what it said. That's a serious problem. And so I don't worry about, with the magazines and all this sort of stuff, but some of this stuff, if you say trigger alert, conversation shut down. If you say microaggression, conversation shut down. I've got a problem with that. I'll be honest. I think we all need to sit there and we need to actually be open about how we feel. To me, the whole thing about, what Jews always said about the Holocaust is you never forget. If you forget and you don't talk about it, it happens again. I would rather know how people feel. I don't want them to not say things because society will sanction them. I want them to not say things because they think it's wrong. And if they don't think it's wrong, I would hope they would say it. And so I know that that's a big – I'm biting off a big chunk here. But what I'm saying is I don't see it exactly the same way as Digby. If he complains or people from that sort of centrist-y media, I couldn't care less what they say. It's more when I see progressives with good intentions being attacked – by other progressives who have put up almost a sort of authoritarian line that if you use the wrong word or say the wrong thing, even if you haven't been around to experience or learn about how we're now talking about something in a different way, you're banished. And again, I've seen it on, it's not like I'm not talking from, oh, I read that somewhere. I've seen this before my eyes on listservs, and I think it could become a bad thing. So there you go.
I am not as sensitive to that. I mean, I think my feeling is there are jerks everywhere, and there are people who don't really who are not conscious of other people's feelings, and this goes back and forth. And I think also it has to do with and I think Atreos had written something like this over the past day or two. From my perspective, I have a very big platform, relatively speaking, to the average person. I've been able to go on MSNBC literally hundreds of times for years. The Majority Report is a fairly sizable platform. And
yeah,
so
come on, don't discount this.
Right. Well, no. But tens of thousands, and it's not. I mean, that's not nothing. And in the context of our numbers probably rival Al Jazeera's at this point. But that said, but on the radio, that's sort of shocking to me in some way. But when on the radio, we were talking to millions, and so on some level, my feeling is that part of having that platform is an ability, an increased ability to absorb some of these attacks. And when you talk about, a guy who comes in and he's maybe ignorant about, being sensitive to certain things, he shouldn't be attacked, but he should. But it is worthwhile, in my opinion, to vigorously say, hey, this is what you're saying is offensive to me because of X, Y, or Z. And I don't
know. You're right. I think it's how you say it.
And it's how you say it, I think, in those contexts. And I think, I think the more interesting thing to me is that, in particularly in this age of Twitter, the bars to entry in terms of having a voice in this larger discourse is much lower even than it was for a blog. It took a while. If you were a blogger, it wasn't like you could just set up a blog and then people would pay attention to you. You had to have an extended period of time where you would basically, in some fashion or another, based on merit, based on a combination of merit and social skills maybe – you would basically get into the conversation. On Twitter, there's still that. You can't just set up a Twitter account and people are going to follow you or retweet you or you're going to have any influence. Over time, people judge you. They like whatever you have to say or they don't or whatnot, and they repeat. My point being that we're going through another phase of, on some level, of the democratization of discourse. And that is always going to be offensive to people who have benefited from the lack of the democratization of discourse.
Well, you're right. So people like Shane, that's what I'm saying. They're not my concern. And frankly, you're not my concern and I'm not my concern because, you know, you've through this show and the Daily and MSNBC, I don't go on MSNBC as much as you, but a decent amount, and the Daily Beast and some other things,
right.
CNN mm-hmm. that I've done. So people can criticize me all they want. I'm more concerned about the activists that don't have this platform, that are coming places and just aren't sort of attuned, so that they're invited with open arms and said, you know, this is not how we talk about this. This is offensive to me, and here's why, as opposed to get the hell out of here. And I can tell you, you know, on some listservs, I've seen some get the hell out of here. I've seen some, you know, your whiteness is blinding me and things of that sort that I just don't think are helpful.
Well, I mean,
and you may be right. It may just be individual assholes. I don't know.
But it also, let me just also say that, like, this is just sort of a natural, I mean, this is sort of a natural occurrence. I mean, it's, you know, people... The expectation necessarily that people who have been who have been subjected to this type of you know oppression or you want to call them microaggressions or who have been subjected to this type of just being an afterthought in the context of society, they're going to be mad. And they have a lot of reason to. And sometimes I think it's more it is a lot to expect that these people are going to have the emotional maturity to handle the fact that they have been crapped on for an extended period of time and have had to not be able to accept who they are. They've got a process to go through, too. So, you know, I feel like this is a stage. A phase that we're going to have to go through, and it's going to be messy at times. And I think to say, like, hey, that person treated me poorly, and I just didn't know is, you know, I think that's a perfectly legitimate thing to say. To write an intellectual treatise, ostensibly an intellectual treatise, that this is somehow an attack on some type of institutions, I think is really problematic.
All Chait did for me is open the door to having a real discussion. Chait is not part of that discussion. To me, I think if people on the actual left with each other at conventions, whether it's Roots Camp or Netroots Nation or whatever else it is, need to have these conversations, because I think a lot of people who are progressive out there that aren't the sort of small group of people, and it is small when you compare it to overall out there, who are involved in online politics, whether they're liberal white, whether they're African-American, whether they're Hispanic, are not attuned to all of this, right?
Right.
They're just not. And I think that we risk, and I've seen it happen, alienating people by saying, well, you didn't say the right word there. You offended me, as opposed to, look, you made a mistake. This can be taken offensively. It's how you do it. And I've seen it done poorly in a few places to the point where it really bothers me. So, again, all Chait does is open the door for a conversation. What Jonathan Chait gets offended by, I couldn't care less. I mean, this is a guy who supported the Iraq War and said he hated Howard Dean and God knows how many other stupid things he said. And as Digby pointed out, he and Joe Klein and a bunch of these people were just upset because their voices didn't reign supreme anymore. There are people who started their own, you know, their own blogs who suddenly were getting more traffic than them. So there's a lot of that tied up in that. With me, none of it's tied up in that except for not wanting to alienate potential people that can be on our side who truly are progressive, not Jonathan Chait.
Right. And I think that's, you know, that's a skill set of that is not necessarily tied into this. Right. I mean, that's a skill set that says, like, how do you manage people? How do you build allies that may or may not? Yeah, it's an emotional maturity that is may or may come out, you know, may or may not come out as in, like, I don't like the language you use, but it also could be like, you know, hey, I, you're not, it could be perpetrated by a white person as much as a person of color, or it could be perpetrated by a cisgendered person as it could be someone who is not. I mean, so that is, I don't know. I mean, I think people should just sort of, there's
do
some
I think
people
it's the end of the world? No, I don't think an apocalypse is coming. I don't think this is nearly as important as about 10,
except for those eco guys who those enviros who are like the world is coming to an end. Like they're no.
Well, they have the right to their opinion. You know, as Jim Inhofe has the right to his opinion. Exactly. I mean, it'll be interesting when his house just suddenly lights on fire because it's so dry in Oklahoma. But you know, that'll be something he'll have to deal with.
All right, let's talk about something else because we got a little more time here, and this I found a little bit annoying, but I guess better late than never. Yesterday, President Obama, in announcing his budget, declaring an end.
He became a blogger.
Huh?
He became a blogger.
No kidding. Declaring an end to, quote, mindless austerity. President Obama called for a surge in government spending Thursday and asked Congress to throw out the sweeping budget that cuts that's the sequester, of course. He's proposing $74 billion in added spending. I think about half of it would be go to defense, and the other half would go to things that are actually important to people who are not tied up in the national security state. But be that as it may, he's looking to reverse the sequester. Unlikely this is going to happen, and I suppose it's good. I mean, we're in a weird place right now, Cliff, where, you know, the only thing that I really think is likely to happen or could happen that I think people should really be agitating against is fast-track authority on the TPP.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
I mean, it is a weird place because right now most of what he's proposing to do is stuff that we've supported forever and thought he should have done when he had the majorities to do it and had the country behind him and had the polling behind him and all that. But we don't need to go into that for the umpteenth time.
Right.
Better now than never, because the point is culture still determines politics. It's why people can never understand how important presidential speeches are. Senate speeches like that one by Elizabeth Warren on banks may have stopped Weiss from getting to where he got to and may have killed a bill. All right, all of this stuff taken together, media, hell, arts, everything is important. When you change culture around something, you can then change politics. And so, I think that Obama talking about it now will lead others to talk about it, will mainstream it. That, yeah, there should be paid sick leave. Why isn't there? You know, why are we the only advanced nation without it? And these things need to be done just the way them trying to push for that bill and failing on gun safety. Well, now we've since then had about seven states tighten things up. We're going to have three or four more ballot measures coming up. We've got cities enacting certain ordinances. We've got all sorts of other things. It changes things. It inspires activists. It helps. But so I'm happy he's doing it. Too later than I'd like, but I'm happy he's doing it. With TPP, obviously, we've got to figure out what, you know, and there's smarter people than me who work on the issue of trade more than me, but what the strategy is. Look, already my home state senator, who's made his career on being against trade, which is Sherrod Brown, he's kind of to trade what Elizabeth Warren is to banks. You know, he will go down fighting on that thing.
Right.
I can promise you that. He's already out there against it and speaking out very vociferously. And he'll be joined, I'm sure, by Bernie Sanders, who's going to make it a presidential campaign issue.
Elizabeth Warren has talked about it as well, actually.
Yep. And so is Jeff Merkley. And so these are not, you know, there are enough voices there that.
Well, the real question on TPP, on fast track, is going to be what, frankly, the far right does.
We should get the, you know, buy or rent like WorldNet Daily email lists and stuff, and just send out our own scary email and be like, oh my God, if you allow this to happen.
Well, no, I think
systematically your house will be moved to Shanghai and you won't be told to come home and it will be there.
I actually think the messaging is two-part on the right. It is one part is, are you really going to give President Obama more authority in terms of the fast track? Because you really want to kill the fast track.
If you allow him to do this, this is the last bill.
Well, no, it's just like,
Sam, I'm telling you what you got to say. We say if he passes this bill, he's then passed 15 bills and he automatically gets his American citizenship.
But the other thing is that this is actually when we talk about when they talk about the one world government, this TPP and the TTIP, these are in fact essentially taking away the sovereignty of this country and frankly all the countries that subscribe to it and handing it over to a three-person lawyered industry panel that essentially has the ability to make countries pay for any type of regulations that would inhibit the potential or the presumed profitability of a company's plans. But let me go back one second also to say one more point about the President Obama coming out with these proposals that obviously, you know, I don't know that we're going to see. It's possible that we could see some increased spending on the budget, and it could be some type of negotiation to get, you know, the more military spending. And we may even see some Republicans, you know, Ted Cruz may come out and say we need to be giving more money to the military, you know, as a way to distinguish himself from Rand Paul. But just for example,
maybe Rand and Ted to distinguish themselves from the others will be against it. Has Rand Paul said anything about this yet?
No, I don't know. I don't know if he has, but
because I could see those two and maybe Mike Lee. I mean, I could see you getting
Lindsey Graham might be out there.
Maybe six to maybe a dozen on the far right, particularly the ones that are running for president, which seems to be all of them. I could see them to appeal in certain, in some of the caucuses, to appeal in Iowa and places like that. You know, you may just have to do this.
Right.
And so I think that's your play, because you may get a dozen Republicans, and certainly there should be enough Democrats. You know, you should be able to get 25, I would think, to 30 Democrats. God, I would hope, but maybe I'm wrong.
But even aside from those dynamics, there is no doubt in my mind that there is very little the Obama administration is proposing at this point or has been proposing that has not been at the very least close to being cleared by the Clinton people. I mean, look, we have John Podesta, who is in the White House with President Obama and moving to chair Hillary Clinton's campaign. Not going to run it, but is going to be the chair of it. I mean, so there is what
and you're going to be spokesperson, I think, right?
What's that?
You're going to be spokesperson, right?
Am I going to be spokesperson? Highly unlikely. But I will entertain any offers. Let's see what the cash is. But that said, I mean, I think what we're seeing on some level is, at the very least, trial balloons that are being used by the Clinton, the nascent Clinton campaign, essentially, as to where they're going to go. Because if President Obama says needless austerity, right, it is hard for Hillary Clinton to come out there and say we need austerity. Okay, I mean it just makes it that much harder. And I don't think he would come out and say that unless there was an attempt to pivot their positions. Now don't you know. I don't want anybody to email me and say, you can't tell me that you think Hillary Clinton is going to adopt some type of, Dean Baker economic plan, do you? You know, no, of course not. But, I mean, it's interesting to see this. This is where the relevance of what we're watching here. It is setting a mile marker. It is setting a watershed from which, you know, this is going to be essentially her. I don't know if it's going to be her right flank or her left flank, frankly, but it's going to be, you know, we are getting an approximate notion of where she's going to run. And it's,
you know what else, just thinking about it in the primaries coming up, of the people we know who are running, my guess is Martin O'Malley as sort of an establishment liberal would be for it. But in addition to Bernie Sanders, you could see Jim Webb, who's kind of the, you know, let's bring Southern white,
Scots-Irish, yes.
Let's bring the Scots-Irish back in. You could see him coming out against it. And who knows, it would be from her left or her right.
Are you talking about the TPP now?
Yes.
Yes, yes. But I think, frankly, I think there's a six-month window to get fast track, and that's it. period. Because once you start getting into the Republican campaign, now it depends. You know, Ted Cruz, I got to imagine, is going to be out there saying you cannot give President Obama more authority than anything else. And, I just think by the time you get into the fall, it's just not going to happen. But I think the surprise is going to be that Rand Paul is not going to run. And I think that's going to change the dynamics.
Tell me, baby, what makes you think that?
One, he cannot be on the ballot as
he can't be on the Senate ballot and the president.
With that said, maybe he goes into the debates and he thinks it raises his profile. But I mean, does it raise your profile to be one of nine guys on there and go back to the Senate? I don't know.
And then if you flub up and it looks like you're losing, people need to remember what Rick Perry pulled off for his reputation last time.
And here's the thing. Rand Paul, I think, is far more establishment than people recognize. And he is a guy who I definitely think is ambitious enough to say, like, whatever you guys, the establishment in the party, wants me to do, I will do it. If you think that if I hang around a little bit, I can drive Ted Cruz off the right-wing rails, I'll do that. If you think it's better for me not to, then I won't.
And he's much more amenable. He, as we know, every once in a while he does something like gives a big speech on drones or he doesn't follow up. Or I think it'll be interesting. I think people should sort of see what he's willing to do in terms of, you know, in 2016, there are going to be a number of other states it looks like that'll have pot on the ballot. Well, put your money where your mouth is.
And look,
right?
If I'm Rand Paul.
You say you care about this, get your ass out there and talk and rally for legalizing pot,
And if I'm Rand Paul,
look,
if I'm Rand Paul, I'm not convinced that I've got an easy re-election to the Senate in Kentucky on an on-year election with Hillary Clinton on the ballot and a lot of women coming out.
She'll do a lot better than Rand Obama did in that region.
And I think she's going to do a lot better. And I think, a lot of women coming out to vote, that's not going to help Rand Paul. And so I think he's probably going around as much, looking for money for his Senate election, too. I mean, that's the theory I've seen floated. So
here's the other thing is that there's ironically enough, there's actually quite a good bench in Kentucky. You know, you've got Allison Munzering Grimes right. Again. You've got their LG who just went to Washington, but, was their LG, who was the mayor for life, as they called him, Jerry Abramson of Louisville, who was reelected God knows how many times there. And there's, Jack Conway looks like their AG will run for governor, who lost to Rand Paul last time. But there's others I'm missing, too. There's really about five or six pretty big names mm-hmm. in the Democratic side.
And you've got you a is, popular
in a presidential
Democratic
year election,
governor.
If Rand, yep. Right. In a presidential year election and with a Democratic governor, if that seat is left open and he loses and may lose it, and then he also loses the presidential race, if he were to win the presidential race, they'll forgive him. If he loses it, either in the primaries or in a general, and then they lose a Senate seat on top of that, he may be done. Mm. So there is that, too. They will hold that against him for ditching that seat for his own ambitions. So that's worth thinking about, too. It's true.
Well,
whereas Marco Rubio doesn't have to make that choice, although he's said...
No, Rubio does have to make that choice.
Well, I don't think the legislature... No, I don't think it's the law enforcer. He has said himself he won't run for both. Okay, so I think he won't. But
yeah.
I don't think it's a law in the state. But in the end, he said he won't, which means the big thing that everybody here should be doing right now is making sure it's not like Patrick, Murphy or Debbie Wasserman Schultz or some insider trade-off artist who ends up getting that nomination. Alan Grayson has talked about running.
Mm, interesting.
That could be fun.
All right. Well, Cliff, we got to go. We have plenty more to talk about next week. I imagine this all this stuff will still be happening then.
Yes.
I still think that my Walker pick in my fantasy draft may be the best pick. But
I'm at a point now where I honestly think it's Walker or Rubio.
Rubio?
I do. I think they have the most crossover appeal between wings of the party.
I think I think Rubio is – no. No,
I hope you're right, and I hope you're wrong about Walker, and we're both wrong because those are the two. Those are the two in a general election that actually scare me the most. Those are the two that have shown in swing state territory they can win big.
Cliffy, we'll have to do it
next
week. All right, I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thanks,
take
I appreciate
care.
It. Bye. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break and then come back with the wonderful Isabel Gurley's. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure for me to instruct Matt to play the following theme song. Matt, play that following theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Of course, the dulcet tones of Jimmy Reefer Cake from allthehypocrisy.com on those theme songs today. Isabel, how are you?
Happy 2015.
Wait, have we not talked?
First time
no.
on. Wow.
Is it?
Yes.
No, sir. No,
wow.
sir.
You got to be kidding me.
No.
I had no idea.
Happy
oh, my
New
God.
Happy New Year, Isabel.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year, fellas.
They're all nodding their heads.
Thank you.
How's 2015 going for you already?
Pretty good. Pretty good, I would say. Well, we have one more day of saying Happy New Year.
Oh, all right. Is that the law? I had no idea.
It's the law.
All right. I had no idea that was the law. Well, Happy New Year to you. Now, I should tell people that, you know, during the break, I call you and we talk and... then we come on just, and I think you may have forgotten to say something to me, when I called you.
Happy birthday?
No, that would have been a little bit late.
Shabbat Shalom.
That's always nice to hear. But that is not what I was looking for.
Maybe
this will, jar your memory, Isabel.
Would you like to come to a Super Bowl party?
Oh, go ahead, play it. This is from last year, ladies and gentlemen.
Talk nachos, and I got all sorts of IPA beers and wings, and forget about it. Best wife in the world. Are you kidding me?
That's pretty nice. All just for Peter, or are you having people over?
Yeah, we got some people over. You know,
that's all right. I'm busy.
Neighbors.
I'm busy.
No, it's not like a huge party. It's just upstairs
neighbors. I mean, it doesn't sound like a huge party. You got a whole pork butt. I mean, I'm sure that it's probably just for one or two people. It's all right. Look, Isabel.
I have three children.
That's fine. I'm going to be busy. I've got other commitments. I've got a lot of other commitments on Super Bowl Sunday. In fact,
you can come over.
I think she gets the message. So, Isabel, it only took you three tries to remember that maybe you should be inviting me to your Super Bowl party.
As I plan my meal of Rhode Island clam chowder.
Rhode Island clam chowder. Whoa.
Can you guess who I'm rooting for?
The Pats.
That's right.
Now, why Rhode Island clam chowder as opposed to the more New England?
Creamier?
Well, now, wait a second. Okay, go ahead.
There are three. There are three
Manhattan,
chowders
New England,
in the Northeast.
Rhode Island, yes.
Right. And my husband Peter is lactose intolerant.
Mm.
So a big, heavy cream soup.
I gotta get one of those. Right. All right.
Yeah, that doesn't go over so well. But I find it a little heavy myself. I love Manhattan clam chowder, but that would be appropriate if the Giants were in the Super Bowl, which they certainly are not. So
Rhode Island clam chowder is the best.
It's delicious. There's no cream. And
it's just a broth. And it's so
I went to RISD, so I can, you know, I'm a Rhode Island girl a little bit. And then,
That reminds me.
What?
My cousin, John Pincus, says hello.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Apparently, my cousin was your teacher at one point.
He was my teacher.
There you go.
As I was a young lass of 14 and 15.
That's right.
He taught me, and he was the one who was looked so sad for me when he gave me a 14 on a test.
Yeah, I think he told me that story and said that he was really hungover or something that day and didn't want to say anything. That's why he looked so sad. He wasn't actually sad about the test.
About that I got a 14?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on, I think it was just, because we had Saturday classes.
14 out of 15, right?
No, I wish it were true, Matt. Was that Matt that said that?
Yeah.
No, it would be 14 out of 100.
Wow, that is bad.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
now,
yeah.
Was this a function of your dyslexia?
Yeah, learning disabilities in general. But
did you know you had dyslexia at that point?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Did it occur to you to tell your teachers?
Well, not you didn't have an IEP or anything in those days.
But you didn't tell your teachers.
They could figure it out.
They didn't know.
Pinkos knew what was going on.
I told him that you had that, and he was like, what? I never knew
that. Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe she told him on the day he came in hungover.
No, but this is the thing, is that, like, I feel like, Isabel, your whole academic career could have been different if you had just told your teachers that you had dyslexia.
Well, they knew when I was in elementary school, but, it wasn't the same deal as now. It was totally...
People just think you're sloughing off at that.
You're a dumbass. Think you're an idiot.
Dyslexia.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
Mr.
then you should
Pinkos
study harder.
Always came. He came to my performances of Anything Goes in the Pajama Game.
Wow. He did not remember that, I don't think.
You don't think so?
No.
Probably not.
Because he was surprised to hear that you were an actress. He didn't know. He had no idea what you had been up to.
What?
Hey, that's what he claims. I mean, maybe
really?
He's been, yeah.
He only remembers that I got a 14 when he was hungover.
He told me some story about that. I can't remember what it was.
Well, he was a very nice teacher that did come to our school performances. Maybe they had to. I don't know.
I don't know either. But you're the second. You're my second friend that he taught.
That's crazy. He must have been 22.
Yeah, he couldn't have been that much older. No.
Which when I think of a 22-year-old now, I just think what.
Yeah, exactly. How are they allowed to teach anybody?
Yeah.
Anything.
Right. Except maybe math, which...
So,
yeah, that's crazy, of course, but...
You go. We'll talk more about that later, but Rhode Island clam chowder. Now,
Rhode
the
Island
next
clam
thing
chowder.
That you're going to... Now, you tell us the next thing you're going to serve at your Super Bowl party that I'm not invited to, and that
Roasted radishes.
Roasted radish. Well, I should also tell you that Stephen Radish, who was your dentist, is my cousin. I'm joking. Roasted radishes. Good for you. You're the only person I know besides myself who knows that you can roast radishes, and they're delicious.
They are, because it's an experiment for me.
You're going to love it.
Okay. Well, I sort of think of the radish as a sort of New England-y thing.
Maybe. It's a root vegetable, so it's one of those things that we would grow in our garden and keep in our root cellar. What else, Isabel?
Of course, the wings. Wings will
now,
be
now, are you going down to that place in...
Blondie's.
Blondie's, that has apparently the famous wings?
Sure I am. It's now on, like, year 6 or 7 or maybe even 8 with Blondie's.
Don't you have to order a week in advance or something?
A month.
You're kidding.
No, it's not a month. It's whenever the playoffs are over.
That's absurd. Okay.
Yep. And last year, they didn't even deliver it to us, and I had to, during halftime, take a taxi down. It was a disaster.
I remember that story. Yes.
Yeah.
I remember it well.
Yep. And root beer and cream soda, of course. And I don't know. I'm toying around today.
How many people are you inviting? I mean, besides
just the neighbors.
Me.
It's just the neighbors.
Oh, I see. Okay. Neighbors being anybody who lives in New York.
Here's why. Okay, I'm ignoring your New York. That would be Manhattan, not the 718.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Wow.
Ooh. No, but listen. Here's the thing with the Super Bowl. It's sort of not kid friendly because it starts at 6:30.
A real problem for me because Myla has basically said to me, you've got to watch the Super Bowl with me. The Patriots are our team. And when your 9-year-old daughter says that to you, what are you going to say? sorry, I want to go hang out with a bunch of guys from Massachusetts so we could just drink beer and yell at the TV. No, you
that
say,
would be a
okay.
good way of sort of introducing her to Mass culture, Massachusetts culture.
If I would go to a party with her, if we could leave at halftime and come back home, right? Because she can't stay
right.
up till 10:30 at night. But here's the problem. Halftime is, what's her face?
Katy Perry. And she's going to want to see it.
And Milo's like, seeing Katy Perry at the Super Bowl is like, that's it, man. That's...
Oh, no. You have to be at home. This is why, and in all seriousness, this is why the net we cast out is a net of consideration, because we know that people don't want to, you know, even travel across the park on Super Bowl Sunday.
Now, last year, I could have done it. I mean, you're sort of saying that that's why you're not inviting me, but last year, I would have been actually very convenient.
Well, yeah, but, in other words...
Sam, give us a break.
Are you, like, super Everybody's, pumped up? Are you a long-time... Patriots fan. I mean, I'm just jumping on the bandwagon because of my New England ties that are, you know,
I remember.
There.
Listen, Mosey Tatupu. I remember. I mean, I remember Plunkett when he was playing. I remember Sam Cunningham. I can't remember now the name of his of our. We always had a. We had one of the first big tight ends. I can't remember his name now. He was from Hawaii. But
I have no idea. But
Victor Kiam.
Here's one thing. My little
horrible.
Nephew, Jack, we were watching some playoff game, and he said, and I was like, yeah, Tom Brady, man. And he said, he's clutch. And I was like, what? And he said, yeah, he's a clutch player. Now, he's, you know, the greatest quarterback probably of all time. But I like the way he said it. I was like, Jack, are you serious? Tell me that. He's clutch. He's like, oh, yeah, he's totally clutch. And schooled me that only a way a 10-year-old can about football. And I was like, yes, sir. So now I'm all about Tom Brady. And I think I love that clutch. I've been saying it every 5 seconds. He's clutch.
He is clutch.
He's clutch. He is clutch. But I like the way Jack said it. It was very smooth. He was just like, he's clutch, man. And I just read an interesting article about the
Deflategate. How many times is that
going to
come up in your book? Yeah.
Huh?
Well, the latest on Deflategate is that the NFL supposedly never took specific measurements of what the balls were inflated to. So,
well, that's ridiculous. But also, there's a very basic physics law called the law of I've forgotten what the law is called now.
Patriots kick ass, I think it is.
But no, in all seriousness,
awesome.
Hold on,
so
I'm going to figure it out. All these physicists at MIT and Columbia and all these have gotten in on it, and it's something you teach in like 101 physics. And
Bill Nye says no way
that apparently if you take a ball from a 75 degree room and then put it in a 50 degree atmosphere that's also wet, it will deflate.
Mm-hmm. Bill Nye says not as much, but somebody just wrote me. It's Russ Francis. That's right. It was tight end Russ Francis. He was.
Oh,
so
really?
Oh, God. He was great. He was big. He reminds me. Gronk reminds me of him, actually. But I was.
Tell me who I should be looking. Is this too boring for everyone? Tell me who I should be looking for besides Mr. Clutch.
Gronkowski.
Okay.
He is the tight end, and I mean, it's unlikely they're going to win if he doesn't score a touchdown. That's just the way it is. Or at the very least, get at least a half a dozen big receptions. He's massive.
But he will.
He
right?
will. And then the other guys to work, Edelman in terms of catching some balls and Amendola. And then it's really a question of how they're running, you know, they're running game. I mean, the thing with the Patriots is you never know. You never know what they are such a well-rounded team. You don't know if they're going to come in and it's going to be Rouse is going to get 60 yards and running, and that's going to be the game, or if they're going to run 32 yards and Brady's going to be passing the ball all over the place.
You don't know
that's
whether we're going to deflate
Brady, man.
Balls,
he just
spy
looks
on you. It could be anything.
That's right.
We'll come
could
at you
do a
in
sneak
many,
attack in many different
exactly.
ways. Somebody
might
could bring
try to paralyze you.
We could import a Zamboni.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden a Zamboni comes out into the field in Phoenix. You don't know why.
Belichick has many options, and we're a strategic team.
Oh, my gosh. Is everyone Patriots people?
Well,
there?
I mean,
not me.
Michael's from Massachusetts. I'm from Massachusetts. So?
So, 2 out of 3.
Yeah. They're America's team.
3 out of 4. 3 out of 4, Isabel.
They're America's team.
Oh, including
team.
Myself?
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down. I'm there. I was rooting very strongly, though, for my guy, who do I love? The guy in Michigan on the Green Bay Packers.
Aaron Rodgers?
No, his father was also a football player. I'm spacing his name. He's got long blonde hair.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I like that guy.
So, Isabel, what else is new in 2015?
Well, my guitar. I've been learning to play guitar. That's going well. I'm playing a Tom Petty song.
Maybe you can send our weekly song in.
Maybe you need to send us a song.
Oh, boy. Let's give me another 6 months. Let's
All right.
Give me another six months.
Deal.
I remember I tried to sing, and you guys were like, ooh, okay.
Well, maybe you needed a different context.
I'll practice.
Maybe you just can't do a cappella, but with a guitar, it's just everything clicks.
Yeah, well, that should be, maybe. I'm trying to look for this.
Are you learning through a ukulele, or are you doing
going straight
to the guitar?
No, I got a beautiful guitar for Christmas, and
oh, wow.
It's a real guitar.
I hear the best way to learn guitar is to actually start with the ukulele. But
probably, but you know what?
Forget it. You got long hands anyway.
Or pick up bass.
All right.
What's it called? Deflategate? So, I don't know. What else is, you know, I'm trying to find it on New York Times. Deflategate? I don't know. I'm trying to find this physics thing because maybe it'll be
all right. Forget the physics thing. Let's get to the film.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Okay, it's a two.
North Dallas 40.
Perhaps I
Did
should
I guess it?
Start speaking in an English accent.
What?
Perhaps I should start speaking in an English accent.
North Dallas 40, I think, took place in Dallas, not in Britain.
No.
I thought you were going to do like North Dallas 40 or what's the longest yard? Like football.
Oh, you
theme.
Mean get all football?
Yeah, no.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
All right.
Darn it. Well,
James
no,
Bond.
No, I have two actually.
You're not. This
if
is
you
not
really
going to be.
Wanna know.
It's not going to be that really bad Bond movie that you suggested last time.
No.
Okay. What is it?
All right. Listen. First of all, I didn't know if you guys knew about Serial.
Yes, of course. I
do. Have you already listened to it?
Yeah, I live in America.
All right. That's what I figured. I just figured that's why I have two, because I just figured I would throw that one in there.
You know, Serial's not a movie.
You hadn't. I know, but
I have
it's times so entertaining.
I have time to listen to a podcast because I can do other things. I can
well,
pretend
not with
like I'm
Serial,
playing.
Serial, you can't. I tried to listen to it while I was wrapping Christmas presents. No, sir. Any little crinkle, I would miss a detail.
Oh, all right.
So I had to listen to it when I was walking or when I was driving to get Peter dislocated his shoulder.
Oh, gosh. That's
on the
horrible.
Ski mountain.
Oh, my God.
And the only one there was the 10-year-old.
Eesh.
Eesh.
My dad had both his shoulders would dislocate, and it was the worst thing in the world because all of a sudden he'd just scream in abject pain and then literally run into a wall to push his shoulder back in.
Oh, it's worse than childbirth, apparently, the pain.
How did he dislocate both at the same time?
No, he had weak shoulders. So one would dislocate, and then he got an operation, and then the
Jeez.
Other one dislocated.
I was in New York. They were on
Boy,
the mountain.
Throw your dad under the bus like that on air, huh?
What do you mean?
I'm just kidding.
Guys
got weak shoulders.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, so really.
So wait a second. How did
tension,
Peter dislocate his shoulder? He fell skiing?
He fell on the mountain skiing,
wow.
And he then got up. And so Moose, the 10-year-old, is the only one with him, got up and said, we can make it down the mountain, and passed out because of the pain.
Oh, geez.
So then Thomas hails down the
ski
two,
patrol.
These two women that get the ski patrol. He stands behind him, and they go in an ambulance to Hudson, New York. I get a text
Wait a second. Where were you going skiing?
In Catamount. They were at Catamount.
When was this?
This was 2 weekends ago.
Oh, my gosh. So you don't call me. All right.
Ready for this?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm at Mockingjay with my stepdaughter.
What is Mockingjay?
What? It's the, you know.
The Hunger Games movie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Na, 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 na.
All right.
Na, 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 na. The Hunger Games movie. She's 11.
Hold off on that song.
And, you know, Jennifer Lawrence sings that song. And I get a text, and it says, Peter's been taken to an emergency room in Hudson. The car is 30 minutes away. And I call him. He's on so much morphine and so many painkillers that it's basically like Thomas is by himself in the ER.
Wow.
So I had to rent a car and drive up and get them.
Did you leave the movie?
Yes, I left the movie.
All right.
I have no idea how that thing ends.
To the end.
All right. We got to pick up the pace on this.
Okay.
I'm sorry to hear that about them. So what movie are we going to do?
We are going to do, it is not a movie.
Yeah.
It is a show.
Yeah.
Sherlock.
On CBS, that one?
No.
Oh.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
With Benedict Cumberbatch. Oh. What? What? Why is there no reaction to this? By the way, did you watch Transparent?
Not yet.
Oh, my God. What did I come on here for?
Transparent was a good show. And,
thank you.
I got
a lot of tweets about it.
I will keep pushing him along. I saw an episode of Sherlock, I think. It was a British show.
It's a British show with Benedict Cumberbatch and some other dude playing Dr. Watson.
All right. I'm not going to step on your lines here. Go ahead.
I think that you're going to like it.
All right.
It's more than an hour. It's 88 minutes.
Ooh.
Right, yeah,
like
got
that.
It?
Sherlock.
It's Sherlock, it's murder mysteries. It's kind of like an English Law and Order.
Sherlock Holmes? Oh.
It's murder mysteries.
Why wouldn't I just watch Law and Order then without the annoying English accents?
What? Oh, what? What?
I
annoying.
Don't know that
Johnny.
I've been sold. With all due respect, Law and Order was much better when you were on it, Isabel. It's really gone downhill from the times before and after you were on.
You'll like it because
between your scenes.
It's a little male. I got to tell you, it's a little misogynist.
Case, I'm going to love it.
It's not that bad. It's okay. It's really, really cool and sort of noir-ish, you know?
Well, Matt
and
needs to butch
like
up
it.
On the men's rights activists front, so that might be good for him. All right, well, Isabel, I'm sorry. I don't mean to rush you, but
all right, but, you know, I got a lot of good tweets. Here, there's a bigger picture thing, which is that maybe we could discuss it another time. Maybe movies are getting replaced by these, you know,
serial things. Idea. I like that idea.
I'm into them. I can't help it. I'm just going along with the flow, and I'm into
it. I'll tell you something. When the movie business loses Isabel Gillies, they've got a real problem.
I agree.
Because Isabel was like we've talked about this. Back in the day, Isabel would go and see like 5 movies a day.
Yeah.
What'd you do today? Oh, I forgot to eat because I was watching movies.
I ate some Twizzlers.
Dyslexia. Okay.
And I had dyslexia pretty bad.
All right, well, Isabel.
Man. All right, well, listen.
As always.
Next time I'm in the studio, I'm coming to the 718.
All right, beautiful. I'm very excited about that.
All right.
Have a great Super Bowl. I'm sorry that I'm not able to come to your party.
Maybe I'll tweet a picture of it.
All right. Oh, you should.
I'll tweet you know. And good luck. Good luck on Sunday, man. You're a real Patriots fan, and I respect that.
It was going to take a lot of effort on my part. All right, Isabel.
Watch it with Myla.
Of course I'm going to.
Throw her a bone.
Of course I'm going to.
Teach her to be a fan.
Of course I will. All right. I appreciate it.
All right. All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Until Valentine's Day.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Beautiful.
That's when I have good movie recommendations.
All right.
You know?
Done.
All right.
Bye.
Just saying. Bye.
We'll have her on.
Wait, would Valentine's Day even be her? Yeah, I guess it would.
All right. It's pretty close. What do we got from Jimmy Reefer Cake today?
What we got? What we have is a song entitled Reefer Cake versus Cedar, Acknowledge It or Get Served Again and Again.
Oh. Okay.
Or not.
Here we go. Boom. Yeah, Reefer Cake here. The libertarian socialist perspective, son. Acknowledge it, or get served again. Libertarian socialism should be appreciated. You look like you just friggin' masturbated. You think you look cool? You sound like a fool. There must be a limit to the government rule. Too eager to fight, too slow to listen. That's what is broke with our political system. They're using legal weed like a bargaining chip. It's not about the law, they won't let the power slip. Government corrupted on a power trip. That's why libertarianism is so hip. While NSA is getting all up in my router, the rules don't stop the corporate polluter. A corporation, the NSA pays a complete to spy on me while I tweet my meat. Unlike Anthony Weiner, I don't cheat. Mrs. Reefer Cake knows I come complete. Getting money, both sides are on the take. Too proud to admit that you made a mistake. Reefer Cake never fails to make rhyme. Cause true libertarian values win every time. True libertarian doesn't hate the Jew. True libertarian mostly agrees with you. We hate the violence never ending in Israel, like the domestic violence situation in the NFL. My take is your lame argument has to evolve, cause we got things to do and problems to solve.
Oh, no. Yes, sir. Ghost of town,
Okay.
I think that should be like the tagline for libertarianism. True libertarians don't hate the Jews.
I mean,
you sort of look like, I don't know, you're in a hybrid state. You look like you just masturbated and need to masturbate at the same time. It's a weird thing.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, let's hope Jimmy
I think we should have a couple of weeks off from Jimmy.
Really?
I think Jimmy, it's a little too one track. This was a huge improvement over the last couple of offerings. There was some great lines in there. He threw some good bars at you.
Stuff.
I liked the getting back to the weed references, getting back to basics.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Jimmy always would put the weed references in things on other topics. Now we're just stuck on this libertarian thing.
I think
it's a little obsessive.
It's a little boring. And I think a couple-week moratorium might do everybody some good.
Let's get back to taking a topic from the past week and writing a song about
that. Should we take a break ahead to the fun half? We're probably going to go long in the fun half today. We went long in the freebie, as per usual. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Folks, don't forget to nominate us for the podcast awards. If you want to IM me, you can do so via the app. Pick it up. It's free, majorityapp.com. Also, you can call the program. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll be right back.